It's an honor to have had a chance to visit with you guys this morning here in your home. And one of the things I appreciate so much about you, Brother Bobby, and you, Miss Jane, is just your initiative over the years in developing our relationship with the little rambunctious boy on the bus headed from Horse Branch Church to the national conventions so many years ago. You know, naturally, when we sit here, we understand that we kind of represent different generations in our movement as Free Will Baptists. And I wonder, as you look back over your lives, what do you think have been maybe the one or two biggest changes that you've seen since your early days of ministry? How have Free Will Baptists changed? And if so, if they have, in which way comes to your mind?
Well, the field of evangelism that existed in the 50s and 60s is gone. In fact, when in those meetings we had so many part-time churches, quarter-time churches, half-time churches, the people didn't go to church three or four or five times a week. They didn't even go once a week to some churches. So when you went to one of those churches for an evangelistic meeting, they weren't burned out on preaching every night. They didn't have something to do at their church eight nights that week. And from all those churches, they would start coming whenever the news got out. You were having an evangelistic meeting. And in a real sense, it was almost like cooperative meetings without any planning. And that's why they would fill a church with people and you'd have 50, 60 folks converted because the field was white. There'd been no evangelistic preaching done. And the harvest was just unbelievable. That field is gone. Mm-hmm. That day has passed.
So basically what you're saying is the approach that's being taken is just a very different approach. That's where the change is.
Well, not only the approach, the cultural circumstances itself. There are no more half-time churches. Mm-hmm. Most of them have a full-time pastor. They have some evangelistic effort every Sunday instead of just once a year. The whole situation has changed. And for that reason, in fact, a young preacher called me not long ago wanting how to get started in evangelistic meetings in Free Will Baptist churches. And I said, you know, I don't want to pour cold water on your ambition and desire, but I don't think the opportunity is there. I don't think a young man can do now what we did in the 50s and 60s because the field just doesn't exist that mm-hmm. did then. Rob Morgan put it pretty good in that blurb that he wrote for that book when he said that it was an extraordinary day in our church history that is unrepeatable.
Hmm.
And mm-hmm. that's probably what it was. So it was just a great time to live and be involved in evangelistic meetings because I don't think that opportunity exists now.
Miss Jane, is there something that comes to your mind when you look at the landscape of Free Will Baptist that you think stands out to you, something just different, whether good or bad? Anything in particular?
I think it's good now. It's a good change. But when we were growing up, there were not the youth activities that they have now, not anything special for the children. The family was a group, and we did everything together. The parents sat on the pew, and the children sat on the pew with them, and that was church. We all worshiped together. We all did everything together. And right now, I worry about them being pulled this one, that way. And yet, it's coming together. It's good. I like this new thing of everybody studying the same thing in churches, you know, and all. Mm-hmm. But still, I think there's a good thing to see what Mom and Dad are doing in church and how it affects them, mm-hmm. how the service does and the sermon. And it's okay for kids to listen to sermons.
Mm-hmm.
So that I think is a big difference right now.
Well, you certainly had a unique life and ministry along with Brother Bobby because his ministry took him all over the place. And many times you would have been here at home with the young people, with your children. And, you know, there are going to be a lot of ladies who listen to our interview and they're going to be looking at their busy lives and they're going to be thinking about this thing of balance, the importance of having a balance and unity in your life when you're being pulled in different directions. I wonder what counsel you might would give to some of our mothers out there who are listening, maybe some church leaders' wives who are trying to think about their role in the church and in the home. Is there anything that comes to your mind in particular?
Not really. I think probably my circumstances have been so different from not being a pastor's wife and not being a leader in the church in that way. And I really couldn't be in home church because when Bobby was close enough, I went with him. So I couldn't. I did teach Sunday school, but I always had to have a good substitute because I was gone a lot. But I think with me, and probably it's a good idea, but I don't think the Lord ever called me to be a leader necessarily or to be something special. But before I got married, I was absolutely determined the Lord wanted me to marry him, mm-hmm. to marry Bobby. And so I felt like that my place was to be his wife no matter what. Mm-hmm. So he was gone a lot, but I still kept that here at home. And that was my job. Mm-hmm. And that was uppermost in my mind. Everything else had to take its place after that.
Mm-hmm. So you need a clear sense of purpose and conviction and direction.
I think so, and set your priorities mm-hmm. as to what's important, and everything else will fall in place. Maybe messy, but it'll get there.
Well, you mentioned traveling with Brother Bobby some, and obviously in the book Yesterday that came out a few years ago, you guys, a lot of wonderful experiences and memories are counted in that book, some funny, some serious, some more good, some more bad, perhaps. I wonder if there's just one that always just kind of comes to your mind when you think about the past, maybe one for each of you, a memorable experience from those past meetings that you've been in through the years. So one that just bubbles up to the surface when you think about things.
It's pretty hard to pull out of the one.
Well, in the first place, the day school was out every year, we packed the car with Jane and the boys, and we didn't get back to Greenville till the day school started. We locked the house up for 3 months. And so up until they were 18 years old, got out of high school. That was still every summer that they traveled with us, and that's the time I got to spend with them. And so in those summers, they pretty well covered the entire country. Stephen learned to swim in New Brunswick, Canada. They saw Six Flags Over Texas when it was the only Six Flags in existence. They went to Disneyland in California when there was no Disney World in Florida. And so every summer they spent with me on the road. And those experiences of the places we went and the things that we did, so memorable until when the boys would get back and go to school the first day and the teacher would say, well, tell what you did in the summer. Well, they could have used the entire class, each one of them, to tell what they did in the summer. But in those summers, there were some good summers, some good places, some good experiences, and then there were some difficult and bad ones. But it's my wife's favorite place in the world is the Grand Canyon, and we've been there, I don't know, two or three times, but she never gets tired of looking at it. And so one of the trips we made to Arizona, and Paul Thompson made arrangements for us to spend 3 days and two nights in the cabin on the rim of the canyon along this, his car to go up there and do that. So she got to see the sun come up over it and sunset over it and the moon shine over it. And she saw it in the moonlight and in the dark and in the day. And, I'm sure that, and her sister Catherine went with us. So one of the probably memorable times was those, we had been there before, but those 3 or 4 days that she spent just looking at the Grand. Of course, my appreciation for it's not near as deep as the canyon. You know, I'm more like Will Rogers, who said, now I know where I can throw my old razor blades. You know, but,
Well, I'm just thinking about the people that we have met. Mm-hmm. I mean, we have met people of all kinds and all, you know, they've been so good to us. This is an amazing thing. I mean, people think it's something to leave home and go, but I think it's amazing that a lady would open her home to a couple with two young children and let them spend the whole week in their house. And this happened over and over and over with us. Right now, I don't know if I'd really want to do that and be that hospitable. But there were so many wonderful people, church people. I mean, they didn't have motels then like they do now everywhere. So we had to stay in people's homes. And these people opened their doors like we were family and still treat us that way. And I think that was a blessing through the whole thing. So my hat's off to all the ladies that made us their friends and taken care of us and shared everything with us.
We sure hope some of them are able to listen to this and see this, hear you saying that later. We were talking a little bit earlier before we began this interview about things that have changed and the way that churches think about things, and thinking about this theme of revival, which is certainly a biblical theme. It's something we want in our lives. We know that we get a little dry, dusty, as Christians. And thinking about revival, what do you think is maybe the biggest misconception or myth out there that churches need to be aware of with respect to revival, to scheduling revival services, or maybe just the theme in general? What do you think the biggest myth or misconception is that we need to be aware of?
Oh, I think the biggest problem now is that it has passed as we knew it. The old days of setting aside a week of a concerted effort and concentrated preaching for night after night after night, that basically is gone. Of course, there's always been some discussion about whether it was revival or whether it was evangelistic meetings. In my mind, the two are so dovetailed together until I never found any problem calling it either one. Call it revival if you want to. If a revival's what it should be, it'll have an evangelistic outreach and there will be folks saved in it. And if an evangelistic minister's what it should be, it will minister to the church and stir up a renewed interest so that whether it's revival or whether it's evangelism, as we knew it in the 50s, 60s, and early days, I don't think those meetings exist, because most pastors say they can't get people to attend, so they don't even schedule meetings of any sort. Where I used to have two-week meetings and got down to one-week meeting, and then it's down to Sunday through Wednesday, and now they want me to come preach a whole revival and three services on Sunday. What we knew as revival meetings, I think, is not only on the way out, it's pretty far gone.
So then if we can kind of maybe segue a little bit here, and I'm not sure how you'll respond to this. If you just think looking ahead, looking at where we are as a movement, what do you think the biggest challenge or the greatest need for Free Will Baptist churches will be as we go forward?
Well, I think the greatest problem is probably outreach. Some churches use one method for outreach and some may use another, but among most of our churches, the outreach toward the unsaved is almost zero. What meetings I had in the last 10 years or so, more often than not, when I went to a church to preach, we had basically church members who attended, but the unsaved people did not attend. The church didn't have an outreach to those unsaved people. And I think that's true whether they schedule meetings or not, that the typical church, if we're going to reach this generation with the gospel, I think we need some effective method of outreach, which we so far don't have.
Well, I do want to say to both of you again, and I don't know that I'm prepared or qualified to speak on behalf of the denomination, but I know that we are very grateful for your ministry, for what you've done, for what you continue to do, even through an interview like this, because you have helped us in so many ways, and you've given us tools and insights and a life that I know will serve us well in the days ahead, especially as we try to address that particular challenge that you just mentioned. So again, I just want to say thank you to both of you.
Well, I appreciate the young generation coming and seeing some fellows like you and some others. I'm pretty encouraged about the future.
All right. Well, thank you very much.